everybody, and welcome to the Mouth Fist Podcast, Episode 7, back after several weeks of inactivity. We apologize for the long break in our little lame thing, but Steve was sick, followed by being incredibly busy, followed by me being sick, followed by Steve being sick, followed by me being about to go out of town, so we managed to just fit in a recording session. So, welcome back for us, I guess.
Yay!
Yeah. I thought we were dead after six episodes.
We even cheated a bit because our last two episodes were really one episode that we split, that Ryan split in two.
Yeah.
I keep saying we, but really all the editing is done by Ryan, so I should.
It was the longest episode we ever recorded, which is sad seeing as we set out to record a short episode. And that was the best we could do, but it worked out well. It actually was so long and so divided into separate subjects that it split fairly nicely. So
I actually enjoy going through the show notes and figuring out what I fucked up on. I really do have a pretty good memory, but sometimes, like, the whole thing with the Blade Runner books, like, for some reason, I thought the Philip K. Dick's children or something had written them. And I think it's some of his relatives, I think, approved the books, and I just got it mixed up. But then there's a whole Blade Runner thing about the Blade Runner and William S. Burroughs rewrite, like, writing a script based on the Blade Runner.
Yeah, he wrote a long treatment for a novel to be turned into a movie, and then that never went anywhere. But, like, one of the guys that read the treatment wanted to use the title for the movie because it sounded cool, so they kind of forced the idea of what a Blade Runner is into the script to justify using the name. It's a really complicated way to come up with a name for a movie, at very least.
Exactly. At the end of reading all of it, and the fact that in the novel, like the follow-up novels, they explain that was it Bleib something, like it was a German phrase that they made up, because Blade Runner has all the pigeon language.
Mm.
I was wondering, like, can't you motherfuckers just come up with a title? Like, how hard is that? I mean, I know it can be difficult to title something the right way, but I come up with titles, and I'm sure you do too, we pull them out of our ass all the time, to see this, like, huge, like, this maelstrom surrounding Blade Runner, like, the word Blade Runner. Like, it's so fucking cool, we all have to buy the rights to it and everything, and I don't know. But at least I got to read up on it and refresh my memory, and I was like, wow, that's no wonder. Basically, for some reason, I can seem to remember all of my birthday parties as a small child, but I have a difficulty recalling the complete confusing mess that was the creation of the Blade Runner as a title. Not just a story, but as a title. That says something.
Well, it says that you probably got the common sense to not worry too much about remembering how Blade Runner was titled.
Well, considering how it was a very influential movie to me as a child, it's one of the first rated R films I saw. And I didn't understand a goddamn thing about it, being like 8 or 9. But I loved how it looked, and I loved the music. But when I got older, I realized just how stupid of a story Blade Runner is. But
Yeah,
it doesn't make much sense. There was the guy who does the Spoony experiment, Noah Antweiler. I think that's his name. He reviewed the Blade Runner, and which showed up in Knights of the Dinner Table. Back in the old days when it used to show up, his gamers rant at the movies used to show up in there before gamers shit their little pants and are like, no, we can't take it. And that's what happens to you, a bunch of first edition people running things. But a bunch of whiny bitches. But the point is, he made a very well-written review, and snarky, of course, because that's his style. But I agreed. It just really didn't have much of a story to it. Aesthetically, it's great. You know, like, I do enjoy Blade Runner, and people love arguing me on it. I just don't want to think about it. I just don't want to think very deeply about Blade Runner, because then it's kind of stupid, which I don't want to think about. So,
nah.
That's that convoluted mess.
Yeah. Well, at least we've got plenty to talk about this week, having had 3 weeks straight of not talking about anything, to save up all of our exciting life events for.
Oh man, we're gonna like nerds blowed all over the place. Put on your goggles, put on your helmets, put on your giant body condoms, folks. It's gonna be all over.
Yeah, or don't. I mean, if you're into that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's true. If you are. And speaking of that, Sean Demery, who I don't think has actually told us how he pronounces his name.
No, because he didn't listen to the last podcast, so I guess he doesn't know that we talked about his name. For two podcasts in a row, it's just got cut out of episode 5.
I gamed with him online for, you know, a little while too, and I just never got it. So like, meaning like, we played, Warhammer Dark Heresy, Warhammer 40K Dark Heresy, via Skype actually. Anyway, but Sean did suggest something about, what was he suggesting? Something about,
he was suggesting a variety of weird things, but specifically one of the things he was going on about the most was the trend in porn towards cute girls doing disgusting shit, and mm-hmm. whether that would eventually turn around into disgusting girls doing like nice shit, like recycling or carpooling or.
I didn't know this was really much of a trend, but I also don't pay any attention.
It's been increasing really over the past like decade and a half. It's as porn has gone onto the internet, there's mm-hmm. been obviously the fragmentation into smaller and smaller fetishes.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the internet is, it said, obviously, the rules of the internet, yeah. Rule 34, that if it's on the internet, there's porn of it. And, I mean, to a certain degree, now everything can be fetishized and shared with everyone else, which kind of creates more fetishes as it draws people's attention to really specific stupid things they probably wouldn't have focused on so much otherwise. But,
hear that, Mom?
But
hear
it's
that,
kind
Mom?
Of like,
there you go.
It's lowered the level of porn to a certain degree, and it's weird how many dudes are into it. First, you had stuff like Max Hardcore on video, where it's he not. Was kind of gross.
What's Max Hard? Okay, you're talking to somebody, but just so you know, just so the audience knows.
Yeah.
My last experience with porn is basically like at a party, someone put on the Cum Catchers or something like that, and I watched that, and I really don't watch.
Steve is a pornography Luddite.
Yeah, and
odd character that actually, when he genuinely says, I don't watch porn, he doesn't actually watch porn.
It's true.
Not because he does not masturbate or have sex, but because he does require porn to do so for some odd reason.
My porn is walking around and looking at your boobs, girls. Seriously. Just, you know, I'm pretty good at not being noticed doing that, but I've discovered that's my thing. But
Steve works strictly off the spank bank, whereas most of the rest of us just...
I have never masturbated to a porno before. Never done that.
Never.
I think it's weird.
Never, ever. That is super weird. Yeah.
And I've been like, you know, like with friends who are all hammered after the bar, and we're sitting around, they put in a porno, and guys start putting their hands on their pants, and I'm all...
Hold on. Hold on.
Yeah, people do this kind of thing. And really? I'm like, and they're looking at me like, I'm like, this is some
See,
kind of...
See, I've never had a porn viewing experience where it wasn't like totally uncomfortable. It's a bunch of people sitting around kind of glancing at each other sideways, either peripheral vision, thinking like, we're all watching porn together, and we all feel pretty uncomfortable about it. We should probably stop this soon.
Yeah, I've been in those situations too, and but usually porn, I find porn boring. It's fascinating.
Oh, it's not interesting to watch with other people.
And what's the most fascinating porn is, and I don't have any problem saying this publicly, is gay porn is really fascinating because it's like totally alien to me. It's bizarre.
Because there's no eroticism to it and you have no prurient interest in it. It's all just a matter of like, wow, this shit is wild.
Well, I've seen clips of pornos that are like, you know, men and women, and women, and of course lesbian porn. And I just, you know, and there's some sort of interest in there, but there's no story. There's no.
Oh no.
Yeah, I don't get it. No, there's something wrong with me. I think so.
The rise of gonzo porn being short scenes that are not connected, have no story, no plot. It's just. It's a scene of fucking. It's like, it doesn't even ostensibly have like, I'm a pizza guy. Oh, you can't pay me. It's like, there's no framework. There's no story. Like, that's what gonzo porn is all about. And that has been on the rise. But one of the major contributing factors was this like 50 something dude in a cowboy hat named Max Hardcore. He would always wear polo shirts, khaki shorts with a belt with his shirt tucked into it and a big cowboy hat. It was a really weird look, but the dude is like in his 50s and he would fuck nothing but 18-year-old girls and fuck them, go in the pussy, then the ass, then back in the pussy, which is, like, obviously not something you generally want to do because you end up with a UTI that way.
Yeah, right, exactly. But
he does ass to mouth, like, switching back and forth, like, yeah, so he was big on that and making girls gag and, like, he would always dress them up in pigtails like little children and then, like, fuck them and degrade them and then, like, fuck them in the mouth till their face would be covered in slime. But that has now become the norm. Like, violent throat fucking and, like, guys choking girls while they fuck them is now considered de rigueur of fucking porn. So it's weird.
That's what I was gonna say is I like watching documentaries on pornography, and yeah, I love so talking. I've talked to quite a few porn stars and people involved in the industry, and it's really fascinating to me. But I don't watch it.
For anyone interested, check out the BBC series "The Dark Side of Porn" that was about 6 or 8 episodes long, and it was basically a bunch of documentary films shoved under the Dark Side of Porn umbrella. Some are better than others, but The Real Animal Farm and Does Snuff Really Exist are probably the two best episodes. I think they were the last two episodes of the series.
I've seen some of those, and I'm actually probably going to look them up so I can watch them with my lovely better half, who's definitely more into stuff than I am. When I say I like him, I'm just like my father. It's not because my dad and I sat around and watched porn together or anything like that. It's just that I'm really close to my father. And I was like, I remember asking him, like, Dad, you watch porn? He's like, nope, no interest in it. I'm like, do you hate porn? He's like, son, I would fight for the right to pornography, but I'm just not into it. So somehow I ended up
somehow it's a genetic thing with you. Perhaps. Odd.
Same goes for strip clubs. Not really into. I've been dragged to strip clubs, especially.
You've been drugged at strip clubs.
That too. But I was going to say Victoria only has 2 and soon to be only 1 strip club. And here it's they call them peeler bars here, and you can drink at strip clubs here on like Washington State. And
really? Oh man, yeah. I didn't even know that because obviously I've never been to a strip club in Washington, but there's not a whole lot of them around anyway. And I'm from what I hear, they're kind of sad, but that you can't drink in them?
Not in Washington. No, that's why everyone goes to Portland, dude. Mm. Like they go to Union Jacks and stuff like that in Portland. But I was going to say here, there's this place called The Fox, and I go there and it's like imagine Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome if it was full of MMA retards and average, you know, secondary city people, meaning like Victoria size, like a bunch of people just hanging out, like college kids. And there's like a huge, like arena type area where people dance in like a cage and blah, 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 and do their show. And it's bizarre because in the MMA retards, which is really like saying retard, I understand.
A bunch of big chunky dudes in affliction shirts.
Yeah, with tattoos and tans and stuff, which is kind of big here right now. I don't know why, because I have yet to meet like an MMA retard that could hold his own in a fight, but whatever. But the point is, these dudes, you know, they walk around and they all puff out, but there's also people like me just standing there like, what's going on? And here's the weird thing. There's mostly women at these places, at the Fox, like half the time, and they also have a dance club upstairs too, I think, but there's a lot of women there, because Victoria is very female heavy, meaning there's like more women than men, young women than young men here. It's a college town, and there's all these women there, so like at least half the crowd is women. It's where you go pick up girls for dates and shit. Like I went on a date, and the girl's like, hey, let's go, after we were done with our date, she's like, let's go to the Fox. I'm like, okay, and it's a strip club. I'm like, whoa, you know, like it's really weird. You Canadians are weird. And I was like surprised, or like girls' night out always ends up going to one of the 2 strip clubs here. But ultimately, I don't like watching strippers. Like I'll sit there and kind of critique their dancing and stuff, but I don't really care.
Yeah.
I don't judge them either.
I don't think I've been to a strip club since about 2002, somewhere around there. Maybe 2003. Yeah, it's not really interesting.
And it's nothing against strippers. Like if someone tells me they're an exotic dancer or stripper for a living, I have every bit as much respect for them as being like a bank manager or a project manager or works for the cable company, kind of, you know, like whatever. It's like it's the same kind of professional courtesy and respect.
Yeah. It's just a job, but yeah, with a lot more cocaine.
Usually, yeah. But anyway, yeah. So. But back to the whole Max Hardcore, and we're talking about porn being more hardcore and stuff, because I'm totally derailing this based on my own stuff.
So, yeah, it's led to a modern trend where you have like Sasha Grey, who is obviously pretty famous even outside of pornography at this point.
She was in Entourage. I didn't know who
possibly,
she was.
Possibly. I haven't watched Entourage in many, many years. But
She plays herself, and she plays Vince's girlfriend, I think. Like, it was... I watch Entourage, not
She's
one.
Been on that. She was in Steven Soderbergh's movie, The Girlfriend Experience. She did a voice in Saints Row the Third. She's done a bunch of other shit lately. So, and she was also on... what was it? I Hit It With My Axe.
Yeah.
In like the first or second
season. Satine Phoenix was also on that.
Yeah,
on that
she show. Was one of the main ones that was in there the entire time. And I think Justine Jolie was in there. And
just so you know, Satine Phoenix is awesome. She was on one of the comics and comic shows with me and the guys. And that was, she's really, really cool. I think we totally jacked that talking about board games and D&D and stuff. So.
But yeah, so, but Sasha Grey does really gross shit. It's most of her stuff involves her starting out looking really cute and by the end looking like completely destroyed, having like cum and slobber all over her face and getting violently throat fucked for a while.
Why,
which to me is just like gross and completely unerotic. It's like the reason to look at porn is to see like cute girls. Why?
Well, I don't understand that.
It's like it's a thing that men have now that they feel like they want to like dominate women and abuse the shit out of them and fuck them in the throat and make them look disgusting and horrible.
That's right.
You
hear that, women? Women, you had the 90s. The men are taking it back. So we've had it for the last 6,000 years, but
maybe it's the fact that like women now everything is even. So I guess guys want to like feel sexually dominant or at least have the fantasy now, as opposed to like women having like femdom fantasies where the women are in control. Mm-hmm. Men are to the point that they're having fantasies about being sexually in control, but and then rape fantasies and other shit, or either it's just weird, creepy dudes being into wanting to control women. Because I had a friend who was really into Max Hardcore back in the 90s, which is how I knew, and he was really into throat fuck. Like forced anal stuff like that. So it's like
weird.
So yeah, it's like I think it's a certain clique of dudes who want to be in control of women because women don't like them, so they're wanting to make the women fuck them or something.
Right. I have two things to say. One, I don't understand the whole like splooge in someone's face thing, how that's erotic. I don't, someone please,
oh yeah, coming on,
please
faces,
tell me how that
I also,
is. Like, I don't,
yeah, I never
gross.
Got that, but that's pretty standard everywhere.
It's,
I don't,
it's disgusting. Like I remember I talked to, I can think of this very awesome person I knew back at some place else I used to live, and she her ex-boyfriend had shown a porno that she had been in, and she seemed pretty embarrassed by it, and I was like, I just think it's kind of gross. Some dude came on your face. I go, I don't really like seeing it's kind of gross. I don't really care you're in a porn. Like, it doesn't bother me one bit. But it was, I was like really curious about it. So I started asking people, like, do you find this? And a lot of my male friends and some of my female friends thought it was like totally sexy. And I'm like, I think it's gross. I just think it's like a messy, gross thing.
Oh, dude, you would not believe. There's ones where they hold the girl's eyelids open and cum in their eyes. There's cum eating where they come into glasses and make the girl drink it. Cum all over glass top tables and then shoot undersized. The girl licks the cum off.
See, okay,
it's weird, creepy shit that, like, personally, when I come, it is cause for me to jump up and run to find a hand towel for the girl and then, like, wipe her down immediately. Because it's like you aim for the pelvis, and as soon as you're done, you rush to find some linen to clean that shit up.
Right. Just so everyone knows, like, me and Ryan are actually that squeamish. Like, I know when I'm, like, watching, like,
oh, God,
autopsy,
we're not even slightly squeamish. It's just, like...
Yeah.
Who wants cum all over them?
Well, exactly. I'm like, I can watch like autopsy videos and I go, wait, hold on. I haven't got my Cheetos. Like,
okay. Here's another example that's completely separate and most people could probably identify with. Okay. You go to wipe your ass after taking a shit.
Uh-huh.
You're like, it's done the thing where the water, when you shit, has splashed back up into your asshole. You go to wipe and find out that your folded roll of toilet paper is actually too thin. And as you're wiping, your finger pierces straight through the wet toilet paper and hits you in the asshole. I mean, you don't immediately freak the fuck out, but as soon as you're done finishing properly wiping, you get right the fuck up and you wash your hands.
Right.
nobody's like, what a baby. You rush to wash your hands after sticking your finger in your asshole. But people are like, cum. Well, why do you care that you're covered in cum?
Okay.
Bodily fluids all over your face? That makes sense.
I know why these people exist. It's so I can laugh a lot. And the thing is, like, I realize I'm in the minority. I know I had two things to say before. That was the first thing, and I've totally forgotten the second thing already I was going to say, but I'm sure I'll get back to it. But, like, I don't get it. Like, that's cool. I mean, people, it's just kind of weird, like, what people are into is, there's some bizarre shit out there. And it is, like, I'm not going to name names, because people, like, for some reason, it's okay to, like, have a multi-billion dollar industry based on this shit, but talking about it, well, that's bad. Like, you and I are breaking several, like, taboos here. We're engaging in several taboos.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, this is like an average discussion for us. This is like what we used to talk about on the phone.
True.
We would talk about the shit we took that day. So, we don't really have any line. As far as, like, our personal comfortability level goes, we don't really have, like, lines that we draw as far as what we find taboo to talk about. We will talk about anything. Especially with each other.
I don't care what people do in the privacy of their own homes, and they're out, like, fucking each other and jacking off each other in his hair and shitting in their faces. I don't care about that. Like, that's cool. As long as it's two consensual adults, I don't give one single shit what you're doing. However, like, why can't people talk about that? Like, you start talking about it in public, people freak out. It's like, well, everyone poops and pees, and apparently poops and pees on each other. Well, why can't you talk about that shit? Like, well, why not? Like,
yeah,
you know,
it's strange that the most basic biological human functions are that fucking weird for people to talk about. If you think about the most basic human biological functions, you have eating, which people are more than willing to talk about in
detail. Oh, fuck, dude,
detail.
I'm so tired of that shit.
Fucking, which you'd think people would talk about because it brings basically the same level of enjoyment, but it's considered personal, probably because you don't do it in public or in a group usually, whereas you eat as part of a community, you do not fuck as part of a community. So I can understand at least why, as societies have basically evolved and been invented, I mean, even before there were societies, tribes probably didn't spend too much time all hanging out while fucking. But then, like, shitting and pissing is your one other basic biological function, and it's kind of taboo because, at least in this day and age, probably because of, I don't know, was that the fucking Victorians that managed that one?
Oh, I think everyone has never really talking about shitting and pooping, but it was still like, it was
back probably around the Middle Ages, it was a lot more. The common people didn't seem to mind, I don't think. In society, I suppose it's never been popular to talk about your bodily secretions, but...
Now, listen up, all you foodie motherfuckers. I would much rather watch documentaries on horrific sex things than actually, like, watch people make cakes. Like, I don't understand, like, I understand...
I don't get the fascination with cupcakes and making cakes and shows about cakes, I like food. I like food and I like cooking, but for some reason, like...
Okay, I don't get
cake making and cupcake making shows, It's desserts, I think. I don't like them.
I don't get this kind of shit. You explain this to me, like, I don't get it. Now, first off, one caveat. All you fine women out there, I mean, it's all you women. I don't care if you got curves, whatever, man. That's awesome. I like a woman with curves. However, it was very strange to date a woman who was obsessed with cakes and cupcakes, but constantly complained about her weight. Someone explain the psychology to me. I don't understand.
Bitches be crazy. I think that's the psychology of that.
I'm like, I love cupcakes. And anytime I went past a cupcake store, she had to go stuff her fucking face full of cupcakes.
But also at the same time, you know. She was insane, Steve.
Okay, good point. That's a good point. I just think I like pointing out how crazy she was.
I think the problem is you often find those kind of weird hypocrisies and problems where girls complain about a problem that they're creating themselves with crazy bitches.
Perhaps. I don't know.
I find with the more normal girls that they have the problems, they just don't complain about it while at the same time creating it.
Okay, perhaps that's it. So, I mean, it's definitely not...
That's the balance, I guess, that comes with not being so crazy.
But also, I mean, I can understand the want for, like, deliciously and deliriously awesome foods like bacon, and then looking at my gut and going, holy shit, I'm gaining weight. So, I mean, I do understand the mentality. I mean, it's a bit.
But you realize constantly, it sucks that I'm eating this, but I really want it.
Now, I just remembered what the second point I was going to make earlier, of the two things I wanted to say, and that is perhaps this whole thing about, like, these extreme sex acts, like choke fucking, right, or donkey punching, and things that people find, like, interesting or shit eating, people don't understand that historically speaking, human beings have only been civilized in the fashion that we find civilized for maybe 200 years. Mm-hmm. For the last like several thousand years before that, it was very normal to, like, if our troops were in Iraq right now, they better be fucking the women, like raping them. Oh, and yeah. that's normal. You get
the term rape and pillage is not so well known because
right. It
didn't happen very much.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's pillaging is that. I mean, rapaciousness, actually. I mean, there's a whole, like, story behind these words and stuff. I mean, but it's, in a nutshell, like, I'm not saying it's right,
by the way. I think David Mitchell had a soapbox episode about that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not, of course, just to stem any kind of angry hate mail, I'm not supporting the fact that our troops should be raping and killing people. I'm just saying that that's what's the norm.
Yet another message for the day that you finally have a political campaign.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that our troops should be raping all Iraqi women.
Right.
Or Afghanistani women.
Exactly. Or anyone. But I was going to say,
I'm just saying that in the old days, that's what they would have done.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. That's what they would have done.
Brought to you by a campaign for a better Rick Santorum.
But the other thing too is, like, I guess it's the people, it's the same, those people that complain about that, like people saying, you know, like, oh, blah, blah, blah. It's the same people that wrote in to HBO about how horrifying Rome was. Like, I can't believe they would hit a slave like that. You're like, whatever. That's what happened. In fact, Rome is still a very pussified version of Rome. It's the most pussified, like, it's the least pussified version of Rome that we've seen. But seriously, Rome was hardcore. Ancient Rome was like, killing people was normal. Killing your kids before 18 was your right as a father. So it was like one of those like things that people don't seem to understand that. And beating your slaves was normal.
I think the problem is that something historical like that, people from a modern context, if you had it historically accurate, they would not even believe it's real. They would think you were just making up crazy, melodramatic, insane shit. It's like, you're just doing violence for the sake of violence. It's like, nope, that's daily life in the shithole that was early civilization.
Well, Rome especially. Rome, our entire society is based after Rome, essentially. And the Romans, like, I was watching this thing about the making of Gladiator, not the making of Gladiator, but the real Gladiators. I mean, this made another episode for the semi-history channel. And it's the thing about it is, like, the writer and director from, or not the writer director, but the one of the writers from Gladiator was explaining that, you know, some of the shit they had in the arenas was so wackadoodle that there's no way that people would believe this shit. So they made up a whole bunch of other shit, but whatever. And the fact that gladiators were kind of chubby dudes, you know, that ran around and did like kind of like a, they did a show, you know, they would do this sort of dance between the two arch enemy archetypes, and one of them had to fucking die, and that was Rome, man. He died with dignity and honor, and it was like we just can't fathom what that was like we as a modern society. But raping, killing, slavery, normal everyday occurrences in places like ancient Rome. Remember that next time, cosplayers. So, you know, it was a horrible place to live. And so, like, by our standards, it was terrible. And in fact, most of the world was a terrible place to live until, like, the last 100 years.
But yeah, I guess our modern social mores is...
Yeah. Actually, I don't want to live anytime.
We act like things are becoming more base over time.
Oh, God, yeah. Like, really?
We're the most civilized we have ever been.
I was talking to somebody not too long ago, and they were like, I just want to go back to a simpler time, like the 1800s. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Before antibiotics? Like,
yeah, are go back crazy? To a simpler time when you would be officially elderly right now.
Yeah, or not just elderly, you just died. It was like, you weren't considered, you were old. The reason why
enjoy your influenza, asshole.
Well, right. It's one of those things where it's not that when you were, we have this misconception that, like, oh, you're 40 years old, you must look like an old hag by in the 1840s. But it's more like you just fucking died from something.
Oh, yeah. People lived to be 80 back at the time. It was just fucking rare.
Yeah. But you didn't look old when you were, like, in your 30s like you do. I mean, people age around the same kind of, you know, you wouldn't look ancient and weedy.
Yeah, it would be haggard just because. Yeah, I mean, the human body is made to start breaking down about age 35. After 35, your body is basically in decline as shit starts wearing out.
But just think about I tell people, like, think about, like, before the 1920s when antibiotics were invented. Think about the last time you had a cold or last time you got a lung infection. Most people have, like, these things on a regular basis, you know, like, as a society, you'd be fucking dead. Like, or it'd be unlikely you would survive.
Yeah, I've known people who get ear and sinus infections all the fucking time. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's so, and so the, all you people out there against antibiotics, go fuck yourself. So I like being alive. I'm a diabetic, so I enjoy being alive. I would not be alive if I was born.
You have all sorts of autoimmune issues that would have killed you a long time ago. And to a certain degree, like, it kind of weakens us genetically to keep around all these assholes that should be dead, I guess.
You heard it here. You heard it here, folks. Ryan wants me dead.
Oh, well, everybody knows I want you dead. That's not a surprise to anybody. Anybody that's ever read the show notes knows I want you fucking dead.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, but yeah.
But yeah, porn.
Porn. Back to porn. Yeah, so...
porn has become, I suppose, more base over time, at least in, like, what is considered the norm. Like, anal used to be, like, a special porn that you would get would have anal in it. Now, anal is standard. If you don't do anal now, it's like used to girls would get paid extra to do anal. Now, if you don't do anal, you probably have a hard time finding work because all porn includes anal now.
Now, do people do this kind of stuff in the privacy of their own homes, or is this something they watch? Like, I don't understand.
Do what in the privacy of their own homes? Do porn? Because
no.
The way you phrase that sentence, they either do it in their homes or they watch. Are you talking about, are they doing porn or are they watching sex?
Are they doing the things depicted in pornography?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, at the same time, you've got girls gone wild type business. It's not a weird discrepancy to point out that the attitudes towards sexuality have gotten to be a lot more open. It's not like cameras have just started showing what's been going on with college girls all these years. It's like people are getting crazier and wilder with what they're willing to do sexually. Girls are willing to fucking, like, webcam themselves masturbating and, like, shoving things up their ass and send it to guys now, which obviously was not possible in the past, but now, like, sex has become so open and so much more apparent to everyone that the younger people are becoming much more, I guess, sexually open, which, obviously, you were talking about people not wanting to talk about these things publicly. Younger people are a lot more open, I guess, about what they're willing to do, which hopefully will translate into what they're willing to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I agree. I went on a few, like, first dates with very young women, you know, like, me being in my mid-30s, I would, going on a date with a girl like 22, and they would just ask me what I was into sexually on a first date, and I thought that was very interesting. I was fascinated by it, and...
Yeah, it's a pretty big sea change in the sexuality of young people, isn't it?
Yeah, I was like...
It's kind of a weird shift. Like, I remember when high school, like, you didn't want to talk about sex or masturbation with anybody else. For God's sake, if you mentioned masturbation, people would make fun of you because nobody masturbates. Right.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. You've been
watching like Tosh.0 lately, so you've seen like the dark sexual humor that is considered mainstream now.
Oh man, I love Tosh.0. But yeah, I don't understand why people don't. I mean, I don't expect people to like ask me like how I masturbate or anything like that. But it
yeah. What kind of stroke do you use, Steve?
I don't.
You're a stranger. What are you talking about?
I'm a non-hander.
Who are you, and why are you talking to me at the grocery store? How do you know my name?
Yeah, exactly. And but the thing is, like, everyone, you look around, and I like telling people this, like, usually it's a more cynical observation when I say, look at your food, look at your server, look at your food again, think about all the horrible things you do to this food if this person pissed you off. Now, understand that person you're looking at is just like you. Haha. Or like, you know, look at that Qaddafi guy getting shot. He's no different than you. You'd be a terrible person in that place, too. Well, the same can be said about masturbation. You look around, everyone masturbates. It's perfectly normal. And that's what everybody does. So when next time you're at a grocery store, look around. That old lady right there looking through the watermelons, she masturbates. And
probably. Yeah. Yeah. Women, as far as masturbation goes, it's been discouraged. Obviously, over the ages, especially starting back in, the late 1800s, when it was considered self-abuse and a psychological disorder, yeah. There was a huge movement, especially amongst Christians, to treat masturbation as an illness and prevent it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what was it, Kellogg? Didn't he
I'm not
do
sure.
a lot to try to disparage and prevent masturbation amongst young people. But yes, women, obviously men kind of have to do it. I mean, it's a biological need. Sperm that sits in your body starts to kind of get old and shitty after a while. Don't jerk it for a couple weeks and see what comes out. You won't like what you see.
You won't like what you see, kids.
And you won't like the sensation of mayonnaise coming out of your dick. I'm not talking about good mayonnaise. I'm talking about mayonnaise that's been sitting outside in the sun for a couple weeks.
Now I'm hungry.
Chunky mayonnaise.
Oh, good.
You unfortunately bought the crunchy mayonnaise instead of the creamy. But yeah, women, I think, didn't ever... I mean, obviously, they don't have the need that men do to keep their shit fresh. But I think a lot of women just never considered it, didn't know what the fuck they were doing. So it was something never talked about. So in society, I think women now are just getting to the point that they are learning properly about masturbation and getting into it a lot more. I think younger women probably have a much higher percentage than older women.
Right. The upside to like being a woman, though, is they can masturbate on just about anything. And that's the thing, is like I had a friend that
was on saying, just about anything.
I was gonna say
do you mean that in the sense that they can do it on any surface or do it about any topic?
I was pretty much, yeah. Like they can just sit there and masturbate. And I had a buddy that was talking at one time saying
they can masturbate on the subject of death in Cambodia.
Pretty much. But I was
those cold bitches.
So let me finish for fuck's sake. I was saying that I had a buddy one time that was talking about how jealous he was that women can masturbate just about anywhere. They could be sitting there in church and be masturbating, you wouldn't be able to tell. That's what I mean. And things like that.
Except for the hand in the pants, but
well no. Dude, you need to talk to a lot of
people. You gotta have something to work the area.
There has to be some kind of friction going on. I don't know, dude. Let me finish. So I have a whole point here I'm making.
That's a first.
For fuck's sake. But anyway, he was saying that he was very jealous of women. I'm like, are you kidding? Like, women have to give birth and have menstrual cycles once per month. The least they could do is be able to masturbate just about anything and just touch themselves and orgasm. That's great. Good for them. Whereas, you know, dudes, like, we don't have to give birth to children. Thank fucking God. We don't have to breastfeed them. We don't have to pop them out of our vaginas. Which I already said give birth to women, didn't I? And
yeah.
We don't have to menstruate once per month, which is a fucking psychologically traumatizing experience if the experience is of like a 12-year-old is anything to go by. So I'm like,
dude,
cool.
It seems like such a fucking hassle too.
Yeah.
I am constantly glad I'm not a woman.
Yeah.
Seems such like a pain in the fucking ass.
So
I mentioned that Sharia and she's like, it is a fucking pain in the ass. It sucks.
Yeah.
She's like, this blows. I was like, I would not want to be a woman. She's like, I don't want to be a fucking woman.
So the least they could get is being able to like run their hand outside of their jeans and their vaginal area and kind of get titillated by it. Whereas dudes, you know, it's a whole process. We have to,
They have a lot of problems with orgasming, oddly.
Yeah, I noticed that. Yeah, it really depends on their...
Probably because it's a lot more psychological than it is physical as far as orgasms go.
Yep. Women
tend to have to get in the right headspace for it, whereas men have to work up a good amount of friction.
It is
true. As the phrase goes, they can fuck a rusty keyhole nailed to a donkey's ass.
Pretty much, yeah. That's not... I mean, it's not always the case. Some guys need more than others, but the margin is much wider for women as opposed to men, which is very... Yeah. Like, some guys, like, I have to think about a pirate ship or something like that, but that's all they need, you know, whereas a woman...
But there's a lot of women who genuinely have never had an orgasm in their lives.
Yeah, I feel sorry for them, but...
Yeah, it's kind of sad.
Yeah.
It makes me want to do fucking community service, working on their vaginas 6 hours a day or something.
Let you do that,
it's like,
yeah.
You poor, poor lady, what is wrong with you? Community outreach. I'm going to go door to door in my neighborhood and see what I can work on. and then I will enjoy some more time going around my neighborhood with a clipboard telling them that I am required by law to mention that I live here.
Oh, true. Yeah. So anyway, back to the point.
So we've talked for about 40, 45 minutes about sex.
Which is the most I've talked about sex in like 6 years. So, yeah.
Now we just need to have like a call-in segment and we can be the new love line or something.
That's true. I will say though, one time I actually was listening. Check this out, guys. You're going to smack me upside the head for this one. But I was on a date with a girl who was absolutely smoking hot and she's talking about sex. Won't shut up about sex. And I'm like, yeah. I want to tell you about my latest like Warhammer game. That was me. So
Oh, you what's up, poor ladies? Stupid man.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, speaking of, and you mentioned earlier that you had had a Dark Heresy game with Sean Demery over Skype, they announced in the past couple weeks that they've got a new Warhammer 40K RPG coming out.
That's a masterful segue. That's awesome. Going back from brutal porn and max hardcore to Fantasy Flight Games presents the new Warhammer 40K roleplay game product.
Was it called Only War?
Only War, I think so.
Yeah, that is basically the game for nothing but Imperial Guard.
Which makes sense. I mean, that's Imperial Guard is something that captures the imaginations of most 40K fans. That's why the novels sell like mad. I mean, it's all, like, you know, it's a...
It probably because, to a certain degree, it's an easy one to come up with stories for. Like, Space Marine are very specific, whereas every war story ever, like World War One, World War Two, Vietnam War, all these different wars that you can basically translate into a Warhammer 40K like Imperial Guard story.
Well, much like bondage and discipline from hardcore porn, there's a certain vulnerability to be had with Imperial Guardsmen as opposed to Space Marines. Space Marines are these ultra badasses, so they're the equivalent of a giant phallic coming in someone's face constantly. And you get kind of bored of that. You want to see some kind of action that's like tied up and stuff like that, and you want to see some vulnerability, some like lace to your leather. And that's
I appreciate your attempts at a smooth segue.
Thanks. And that's the Imperial Guard. They don't stand a chance. They're a bunch of dudes that are conscripted from like backwater agri worlds who are like, yo, dude, what's up? Oh my god, I got a mohawk and I'm in the Imperial Guard. Holy shit, Tyranid's dead. And that's pretty much like there's billions. They're the giant hammer, meat hammer of the Imperium.
Space Marines are supposed to be all powerful, and you send two to a war, not like thousands, and they don't die very often because there's what, 1,000 chapter, or
there's 1,000 chapters, 1,000
chapters
Marines.
And 1,000 Marines in each chapter. So there's not that many goddamn Marines.
Nope.
Whereas Imperial Guardsmen, you send a few hundred thousand to a planet and they all die, and you're like, okay, we'll get a couple hundred thousand more.
Yep.
It's all right. We'll have to wait a couple weeks. They're on back order.
And there's that contingent of 5,000 who have been like lost in the warp and show up 600 years late or 200 years early to make it more hilarious. So yeah, so if you're going to do a role-playing game supplement for Warhammer 40K, I would say the Imperial Guard makes sense. I mean, people are kind of bitching that there's no Eldar and blah blah blah.
Yeah, like people whined because it's more Imperial stuff, and why did they even need to release it? Because originally it was supposed to be a supplement for, I think, Dark Heresy.
Probably maybe. Dark Heresy or probably Dark Heresy. That's the most, makes the most sense.
Because there was Dark Heresy. What was the second one that came out?
Rogue Trader.
Oh, yeah, Rogue Trader. Yeah, it could have been either of those. I mean, Rogue Trader is very specific. They all have a specific function.
Well, I was going to say, Rogue Trader's not going to need the Imperial Guard as much as Dark Heresy. Dark Heresy
has Guardsmen
as a class.
Dark Heresy is what it was definitely for, I believe. But yeah, Imperial Guard and Dark Heresy. Dark Heresy is a squad-based thing that's more about investigation. I think somebody called it CSI.
It's Call of Cthulhu. It's basically you run around. I mean, Dark Heresy can be whatever you want it to be, actually, but they suggest is the retinue under an Inquisitor.
Yeah, so you're doing some kind of investigation and, like, team-based missions, whereas then you move on with Rogue Trader, you're traveling...
Star Trek.
Traveling the galaxy, doing whatever the fuck you want. It's kind of a little more adventure-y.
It's Star Trek or Traveler. Yeah.
Then you got Space Marines, which is fucking cut and dried as shit.
Dungeon Crawler.
And then you've got, what was it? Was it Black Crusade?
Black Crusade, which is the evil.
And that's obviously you play the bad guys. Book of Vile Darkness. Obviously mainly Space Marines.
Yeah, I'm making
still
all the
more
analogs
of the same thing.
And just so I can say them all in order, you have Dark Heresy, which is like Call of Cthulhu, X-Files, investigatory, CSI. You have Rogue Trader, which is Star Trek. It's essentially like Star Trek or Traveler kind of combined into one. Then you have... Death Watch, which is Space Marines, which is basically a dungeon crawl. You like, oh, we're going to go, like, there's very little, like, you can't really do much blending in.
Yeah, people actually referred to it as playing superheroes as well.
Or playing superheroes, that's a good one, yeah.
You're playing really powerful characters, so you beat a bunch of ass and you fight bigger, higher level creatures.
Oddly enough, the people I know, Death Watch seems to appeal to 4th edition D&D fans. And it's basically the core mechanic is combat. And of course, Black Crusade is the Book of Vile Darkness. It is the evil book from AEG. I think it was AEG. It's basically I'm going to play evil. And so that's for all you Horde players in World of Warcraft. So it's a,
yeah, I wonder why they went for that one. That's a little strange. I mean, yeah, they're still avoiding alien races like the plague, obviously, but
well, some of the supplements have like the, what was it? The Cronus Expanse, like I believe it's called. There's several things that will have like Eldar and Orc rules and things like that.
A game based around playing nothing but, obviously.
Right, well, all these books kind of, they all use the same basic rules premise, so you can combine them all.
Yeah, it's just different power levels, I suppose.
Right, and they actually are all supplements of Dark Heresy, except for, because you always bring your Dark Heresy book and shit, with the exception possibly of Rogue Trader, they just include the basic rules so you don't have to buy everything else. But you probably will because you're a fan. And also to complete my point I was trying to make earlier is Only War is the military aspect.
Yeah,
one,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's got a much bigger scope than specific Space Marine missions because you send in Space Marines to do specific things. Obviously, two guys aren't going to be able to take out fucking 50,000 dudes, but that's what you send the Imperial Guard in for. They are the fodder.
So. Yeah, Space Marines is not, like, I don't want to insult anybody who likes Space Marines, but I will. Space Marines are not military. I mean, they're technically military, but it's not really a military game. You're warrior monks, you're paladins.
Yeah,
you know,
it's squad-based combat. It's not full-scale war.
Martial, but not military. And then, whereas Imperial Guard is military. There's a structure. You have rankings. You go through the ranks. You have rank progression, is what I mean. You have all these kinds of things. So,
I guess it'll be interesting to see what the game is actually about once it finally comes out. Mm-hmm. Not that I've actually gotten around to reading any of the books.
Oh well, I'll tell you what. One of the things I like,
they're very pretty though.
One of the things I like running at most conventions and stuff is my Ice Station Zangorot game, which is, you know, all Imperial Guard. You go in and you all get massacred.
So now you'll have proper rules for it, I guess.
Yeah, Only War helps with that because I had to basically kitbash my Dark Heresy rules. Only War probably helped with Adeptus Arbyte squads as well, which is the last convention I was at. I ran an Adeptus Arbyte game. So that's the Judge Dredd-like cop dudes from Warhammer. But And also, I wonder what the sales figures look like for the Warhammer 40K roleplay books, because have you noticed they haven't switched up to the Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 3rd Edition format of basically turning it into a board game in order to combat piracy?
Probably because people would be really irritated. I don't think people want that. And plus, most of their fucking games for Warhammer 40,000 are board games. The only thing that separates it from one of their normal games is the fact that it's not miniature-based in any way. Whereas Warhammer Fantasy is, nobody gives a shit about it anymore. I mean, really, there's not that many tertiary games to Warhammer Fantasy these days. So
yeah.
I mean, I guess they figured it wasn't that popular. They had milked Warhammer Fantasy roleplay about as far as it could go, and it was in its current format, and decided they'd do something completely different with it. Plus, it switched from a role-playing game company to a company that was mainly known for board games, correct?
Oh, correct. Well, I mean, Warhammer Fantasy roleplay, yeah, but it was produced by that board game company. Well, Fantasy Flight Games is also known for role-playing games. It's just that they've become more known for board games because more people play board games than role-playing
games. Board games, yeah, it's apparently very popular. Like, I don't know if you ever got around to watching that thing I sent you, but, did you get that thing I sent you? But, there was, the part of the D&D panel talking about D&D Next being the 5th edition, where they were talking about they were taking audience questions, and one of the audience members actually asked about, well, you're saying that you're going to include all of these different modules, things you can put in and out of the game, customize the game to have the rules and styles to your liking, and you're saying that you're not going to put out content as often, you're going to minimize the amount of, like, different classes and other shit added later, because that's just too much stuff. So how are you planning on monetizing this if obviously you want to make money in the game to be popular? So how are you going to keep making money? And they were like, well, we decided we're just going to focus on doing other things too, that we're putting too much focus on D&D as just these fucking books, and we have to keep pumping out books and more as a franchise, because look at the Ravenloft board game. We put that out. It's really popular. People like that a lot. And we can put out more shit like that and put less focus on constantly having to pump out D&D books. Do more other products that are related to D&D, but not role-playing supplements. So even they're getting into like putting out more board games and stuff.
Oh, yeah. I know that a couple of game people out there...
I mean, it's Hasbro. I'm sure they prefer putting out board games instead of role-playing games.
Well, it's...
I think they get that a lot better. They're like, we're making a board game that you can sell. And they're like, thank Christ, it's a box board game we can just sell on the shelf. Thank you. Please, make six more of them.
Yep. Some game designers out there didn't particularly care for... Watching that video, they didn't particularly care for the direction that D&D has gone. So
everyone that's playtested it says it's great. Like, all the people that seem to be doubting it that went that actually played earlier versions of it in various playtest events, though they couldn't talk about a lot of stuff, they really like it. They think it works well. And from what the guys said, it seems like they're genuinely trying to make a D&D that is both good and can be used by the people who want to play 4th edition D&D, the whiners who only want 3rd or 3.5 D&D because all their stuff is not about stats. It's about, like, talking in character to each other.
Yeah, that's Pathfinder.
It's like, it's trying to do everything for everyone and trying to do it well, which is obviously incredibly ambitious.
Well, I was going to quote John Wick here. John Wick is a seminal game designer. He's a really cool guy. But he said D&D has not evolved. It's still a game about mass murder. This conversation confirmed it.
They didn't say they were trying to evolve the game. They were just trying to tie together all the threads from all the different editions. That seems like the kind of like fucking pretentious horse shit. Yes, it's a game about mass murder, but then again, isn't every fucking mythological story going back through the history of time about dudes killing other dudes for probably some not particularly pertinent reason?
My thing too is, because John goes on in this Facebook thread talking about, you know, like, why don't they write more about stories and stuff, and I'm like, well, you know what, let them do D&D the way
that's the shit that's up to the game master.
Let them do D&D the way they want to put it out, and other people can make games that are like D&D that tell more stories. That's what we did back in the past, didn't we?
That is it. They specifically talked about that in the talk, the fact that they just want to provide the best and most flexible rules for people to put together their stories, because your story and the way you want to play it at your table is what the game is about.
That's true.
They are selling you a framework on which to hang your story that you are making with your players. The fact that he's trying to paint that as like, it should be more about story, it's fuck you. I mean, what are you trying to sell? You don't sell somebody the story they're going to create. You sell somebody the rules to help them write it.
I'm a story-based guy for role-playing games, but the first things I do look up with any kind of game that basically at the game system, it's just like getting an operating system for a computer that everyone can share. You look at like how conflict is resolved, and in the sense of like, you know, determining like successes and failures, and then you determine like, so basically fate resolution and conflict resolution. How is combat handled? And you need to decide like if you want something that's more abstract or something that's more detailed. How combat heavy do you want your game? Some people really like their combat, you know, like I like good combat, but I also like my combat quick and more abstract as opposed to like the crazy detail shit that people love.
Yeah. I mean, everything has been done at this point as far as games go.
Mm-hmm.
If you want a game that fits your particular style, it's fucking out there. People just want information at this point about what is being tweaked in rules in a game that they're interested in playing. And they're not trying to rewrite the fucking game to bring in people that want to play Vampire the Masquerade and have some gothy political feud. They're just modifying rules to make better gameplay for people who are interested in that type of game. If you want to go play a fucking story-based game, go play fucking Puppet Land. It's waiting for you. I don't know why like somebody would expect them to reinvent the wheel and change their game utterly to the chagrin of everybody that actually liked D&D just because they're not evolving role-playing. It's like, how is it their job to evolve the entire industry of role playing when their game is the only fucking consistent thing in the history of role playing? They are the cornerstone that is keeping the fucking thing afloat.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, maybe he should go whine more at video games who are teaching kids that everything is a murder simulator.
Oh, I don't really view like John's statements as whining, but yeah, it's
personally I do.
But you're also hearing
those words screams to me hearing, of whining true, pretension. True.
But you're hearing it out of context as well. I'm just giving you one line. Yeah. So
that's the best way to hear things, Steve.
It's true.
At least for audio sound bites it is.
But I will say that, I mean, I understand that he has a deep love for these games and especially his games like Call of Cthulhu, and I deeply admire and respect John Wick and his work. So I do hear what he's saying. He'd like to see D&D be less of a combat simulation. But then again, like as you were saying and everything.
Of course, I could say about Call of Cthulhu that it's not a game about stories. It's about grinding up players into nothing.
The game is what you make of it.
It's just about destroying the morale of your player group.
The game is what you make of it. Role-playing games are escapism. The majority of role-playing games are people gathering treasure and loot, which has been replaced by video games. And not everyone wants to actually play a pretentious vampire game or a game where you play like a lord from a house who's surrounded with like little funny, cool little masquerade masks and talk about the latest like gossip. I some people enjoy that. I don't. So, you know.
Not everything has to be a goddamn thought experiment. Some people just want some silly, like Tolkien-esque escapism without having to go play a fucking MMO and not get any real character interaction.
Well, when someone asks me like what I like role playing games, I instead of trying to explain to them all the rules and like all the different, like, you know, it's a fantasy heartbreaker and blah blah blah, I say my favorite games are Slay Industries, Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, and like and Judge Dredd. Like if you can figure out like what kind of game I like playing, then that's it. I like games with lots of gore and horror and investigating and killing, and like, and I'm happy.
Whereas I'm Paranoia, Tales from the Floating Vagabond, and Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay.
I like that stuff too. Kind of kooky.
Because Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, it's about the world. I really like and appreciate the world in which it's based and think it's really cool.
It's a
so I like the of idea of adventure. Telling stories in that world. Plus, I really like the rule system for some reason. And then with Paranoia and Tales from the Floating Vagabond, it's because I want to tell funny stories, but I like the player interaction.
Yeah.
Because it's a matter of, it's like writing a funny story, but you get to immediately interact with somebody about it. You get to see them laugh. You get to do something that makes them laugh, come up with an idea off the cuff and throw it in. And it's basically doing a little comedy routine with your friends as both participants and your audience.
I also enjoy stuff like Gamma World, which is a mix between Paranoia and Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay. So kind of silly, kind of, or any kind of game that's just dark. Really, if it's dark and funny, I will play it. Remember, was On the Edge?
Yeah, Cult. I never actually played. I never played On the Edge, but I have obviously a shitload of the cards from the card game. On the Edge was the card game, and Over the Edge was the role-playing game.
Cult is another favorite one, and if you like
Cult, yeah, I love Cult. I've had that since that fucking game came out in English. I love the shit out of Cult because it was the perfect hybridization of Call of Cthulhu and so much more dark, sinister shit. It takes like a dark theological concept and like a dark pseudo-Judeo-Christian concept and shoves that into Call of Cthulhu's face.
Right, and if you're looking for a modern game, like a recent game that is a mix of Call of Cthulhu, Slay Industries, and Cult, that would be Unhollow Metropolis, which is...
Yeah.
Which, you know, has a strong but small fan base. I highly... Because it's post-apocalyptic, it's got undead, it's alternate history future, it's great. I enjoyed the hell out of Unhollow Metropolis.
Cult is still probably one of my actual favorite character creation systems.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was the most interesting things ever, because the first thing it tells you to do in character creation is to come up with a history of your character.
Yeah.
Write down a history of their life up to that point, and then you add the advantages and disadvantages and your dark secret, and tie this dark secret about yourself into your character history. So you've got this developed person before you ever really get down to stuff like stats and shit like that. I thought it was really intriguing because you come up with these dark, damaged, fucked up people and then proceed to put them in horrible situations.
Oh, man. Cold.
And it's not like Call of Cthulhu where you're putting a bunch of, like, academics in some situation where they're investigating and shit turns bad. You're putting fucked up people with guns who are probably assholes to begin with in, like, weird, crazy Hellraiser situations. And then you just keep putting them through horrible shit like that over and over again until they're all dead or disfigured.
Speaking of character creation systems that are awesome, my other kinds of character creation systems that I highly enjoy are ones where they kind of create it for you by rolling on charts, and then you play from there. And that would be Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, of course, and Traveler. So Traveler had a great... You could die in character creation. It was awesome.
Yeah, which is interesting. A little bit fucking pointless if you think about it. Like, what's the point of dying in character creation?
I don't know. It's a Grognard thing that just never...
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's like... Yeah, it's cool from the sense that it makes it interesting when you're rolling up the character and all, which I know is probably is a larger than you would think percentage of people's interaction with a game is actually in character creation. Yep. Because you do it a bunch of times because you never play in a game. It doesn't seem like long enough to keep a character around for a decent period of time. You end up making multiple characters before you even ever get around to playing.
Maybe. But I always...
But yeah, it's such a fucking pointless endeavor to have... It's like, well, your character died. You got to start the character creation process over again. It's like, well, you're just wasting my time. It's not really changing anything.
Yeah. Cyberpunk 2020 is another one of my favorite.
The whole character creation system was kind of like that in the Buttery Wholesomeness supplement. Mm. But since they had no character creation system, it was just basically you come up with something and a bunch of random stats, and as long as it's okay with the game, the Holemeister, it's okay with them.
I think people seem to... one of the best things about Hole is it's such an obvious satire, a lot of people missed it, that it was a satirical... Mm. It's not really supposed to be a role-playing game.
It could not have been more satirical. It's the least serious game ever written. Yeah.
No, I agree. But
It's barely even coherent.
I knew people... I remember one time I was sitting on a bus, and I was like talking to one of my buddies I was going to a gaming group with, and he's like, I just don't understand why people would even want to buy that game. It doesn't make any sense. It's stupid. And I just kind of sighed and tried to explain to him what satire was. Because
it's hilarious.
But yeah.
It was worth buying Buttery Wholesomeness just for the little insert booklet that was a separate game called Freebase.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a game that you play in real life. It's a live-action game where you basically take heroin and kill people. And get and you're given experience points.
Yeah.
It was like basically a guide. A schizophrenic junkie would believe that they're actually in a role-playing game.
Yep.
Yeah. That's the type of brilliant satire that we're talking about. And then that kind of got repeated in, what was it, Violence?
Yep. And also the concept was repeated in Slay Industries. I don't know if it was, like, or at least similar. I don't know if it was repeated in the sense that I don't know how much Hole influenced Slay Industries, but if you've ever read about, like...
I've never read enough Slay Industries to remember much about.
Well, ultimately, Slay Industries is an entire universe in a guy's head. And he's on a drug overdose or something like that. I have to look it up to see the specific. It's some guy named Dave or something like that. It's pretty hilarious. Like, because I mean, the universe of Slay Industries is fucking awesome, but they explain all the weird limitations of it that don't make any sense on Mort, the planet in which Slay Industries takes place on. But it's basically like a very dark version of Brazil, the movie, which Brazil isn't exactly a light comedy either. So...
I liked Violence not because it's a game anyone could play, but because it was a really dark commentary on gaming. Like the point that dude was probably trying to make about more story-driven games and not just murder simulators. Mm-hmm. It basically pointed out how absurd Dungeons & Dragons is by converting it into a modern-day game where you play a psychopath that goes, like, apartment-to-apartment and tenement buildings killing people and taking their shit.
Yeah. Yeah, it was Violence reminded me of what happens when your characters go cyber psycho in Cyberpunk 2020. And I remember my players looking at me when they would go cyber psycho. They just go fucking crazy. And they were like, "Well, can I play it out?" And because you're supposed to take this character away and make it an NPC. But I'm like, "Yeah, play it out." And I just watched them just like essentially live up to every sick fantasy they ever had, and being an unstoppable cybernetic killing machine. It's kind of fun, actually. Which is what, and I'm like, I wonder if this is how violence was inspired. But yeah.
So I guess this weekend, Cabin in the Woods and Lockout are both coming out.
And a great segue.
Yes.
Let's move on.
Because we're running low on time.
Good point.
I figured we'd fit that in as a last little bit. Like, Cabin in the Woods, we were talking about it a little earlier amongst ourselves. And it seems like it could be kind of interesting. I mean, obviously, initially, the posters and then some of the early trailers made it initially seem like it was going to be like a Evil Dead ripoff slasher movie in a cabin in the woods type movie. Like, a bunch of teenagers go out to the woods and get murdered or something. And then it has this some sort of weird, like, Vacancy-esque, like, people are watching them, orchestrating it sort of thing. And then it seems strangely science fiction. And, like, the more previews they show, the more it looks like a weird monster slasher, psycho, people watching them, trying to kill them kind of movie. Yeah. So,
well,
don't know quite what to make of it. And the fact that it's Joss Whedon does not inspire any confidence in me, because I've watched enough Joss Whedon shit to know that Firefly was kind of a fluke and he's not that goddamn good.
Okay, so Ryan, so folks, just so you know, to all two of you listening, that Ryan is basically setting me up because we were just discussing this before the show, and he knows something that y'all don't, and that is that I, being the gigantic, enormous self-douche that I am, I let curiosity get the better of me, and I looked up to see what Cabin in the Woods was about. So I spoiled the whole movie for myself.
So if you want to see the movie, don't do that.
Yeah, don't go on Wikipedia and look
it up. I had Steve tell it to me because I don't really care one way or the other. I had no intention of really going and seeing it. Now I'm slightly more interested in seeing it, partially based on the ending, partially based on the fact that it's sounds like it could be decent, that it's actually going somewhere, that it's not just a movie about teenagers trying to fucking escape from getting killed.
I will say this. After reading and spoiling the movie, I actually want to go see it in the theater, and I rarely see films in the theater, but now I want to go see it, like, right away, because it sounds awesome.
I'd rather go see Lockout.
Oh, well, Lockout would win simply because Nicole doesn't like seeing, my girlfriend doesn't like seeing horror movies that much. She doesn't like jump scare films, and Lockout, like, Shreya
just doesn't like violence. Like, violence really weirds her out.
Doesn't bother Nicole.
I don't think we've really gone and seen too many horror movies in the theater since Saw 3, since that movie made her cry.
Oh, sorry, Sharia.
She doesn't listen to
this. That's true.
Why would my girlfriend listen to the stuff I say?
That's a good point.
which I guess it's fortunate after an episode of talking about nothing but porn. But.
Good point. But, like, and that's probably why my girlfriend's going to be listening to it, and she's probably still listening to it right now. Hi, baby.
We'll never be friends.
violence doesn't bother.
Callbacks to old episodes.
My girlfriend actually enjoys super violent films. Crank is one of her favorite films, for instance. But scary.
Something
films.
About certain belabored violence bothers Sharia, particularly like torture, like, and really graphic things. She has no problem with people getting shot in the face.
Mm-hmm. That's right. She likes Doomsday.
Yeah, she liked Doomsday quite a bit.
I did too.
I think she liked it more than me when we saw it in the theater. But yeah, certain stuff, it's generally when it's only in a context that the violence is supposed to scare you. Or, like, she really doesn't like things that imagine parts of her person being specifically damaged. Obviously, she thought it was a good movie, but Hostel was pretty harsh for her, because obviously lingering on, like, toes or whatever getting cut off freaks her the fuck out. But yeah, Saw, it was just a lot. It was a lot. Like, the first couple Saw movies were fine. The third one, it was just really lame. It really did. Yeah. I have a whole thesis on that. But the main theme of Saw 3 seemed to be that they were trying to ramp up, because people were calling it torture porn, which I still hate the fucking term torture porn with passion. I hate the use of it. I do not agree with the concept of it either. But they were taking the aspect, I think, that people were trying to play up, that it's just violence for the sake of enjoyment, people's enjoyment, and trying to make the violence so profoundly unenjoyable and, like, cringeworthy that no one could possibly watch it anymore. That's what I felt like was they were trying to do with the third one, just make it, like, impossible to get through still having fun with it, which I thought they did a great job with, but I guess other people might not. It all went downhill after there. Fourth was mediocre, and fifth was pretty fucking unwatchable, I thought. And then I didn't even bother after that. So, anyway. But, yeah, Cabin in the Woods, hopefully, is at least a little something. It doesn't look like a slasher movie, so it's something I could ostensibly see in the theater. But I probably won't anyway, because it's Joss Whedon and his buddy who wrote Cloverfield and was a writer on Lost. Cloverfield was decent.
I like Cloverfield.
But Lost, like, I don't trust anybody that worked on that goddamn show anymore. I
haven't seen one episode.
see last episode for more details on not trusting former Lost writers.
Yeah. Lockout looks really good.
Yeah. I think they're totally advertising it wrong, especially, like, fucking playing Kid Rock and shit during, like, TV ads for it. It's like, they're kind of playing it like action movie, whereas I don't think it's like that. But they've also started showing TV ads for the new Jason Statham movie that's coming out next month. So that's something worth seeing, too.
Well, it's Jason Statham. Yeah.
It's rough, gangstery asshole comes across a, like, small Asian girl being chased and basically protects her from people trying to kill her.
So a transporter?
Kind of, except in this case, it's not like hot 20-something Asian girl that he's fucking. It's, like, literally, like, a 10-year-old girl.
Why isn't he fucking her?
in Thailand, that'd go any day.
It puts that's the perfectly lotion fine. On its skin, or it gets the hose again. Put the lotion in the fucking basket! Lockout looks really cool because it reminds me of like Escape from New York meets Outland. So
yeah, I think some people also made a reference to the Christopher Lambert movie Fortress.
Oh yeah, Fortress. Yeah, every time I see the preview, I think of Fortress. But
really,
yeah,
every time I see it, I think, holy shit, this is Escape from New York.
Yeah, Escape from New York. And
really, the president's daughter has been trapped in a big prison and has to be saved by a guy that is himself a criminal. Huh. Though in his case, he's wrongly accused of being a scumbag. I guess he's like a cop or something along those lines.
Who has been wrongfully framed
for being a scumbag, and he's basically lit out to go save the president's daughter, who I guess was on some sort of prison where they seem to keep the prisoners in cryo sleep or something like that. And
so it's Demolition Man as well.
Yeah, to a certain degree. I guess she's there on a humanitarian thing, like interviewing the prisoners to see if their treatment's okay. And then one of the prisoners manages to, like, beat up some people, take her hostage, and let a bunch of the other prisoners out.
Con Air.
At which point
space.
It turns. Yeah, I think that's the other major thing people have compared it to as well, is Con Air, Escape from New York.
I don't care how derivative it is. I want to watch it. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like at least partially written by Luc Besson.
Yeah.
And he usually writes and co-writes a lot of interesting shit, usually where people are beating the piss out of other people that I tend to enjoy.
No one mentions Outland probably, but that was a great film, which is basically a Western in space, but it's, I highly recommend it.
I've never seen Outland. I think we talked about that previously. Yep. We were going to watch and talk about Outland and Zardoz, but
I've seen Zardoz and Outland, dude. Where are you? Where are you?
Running? I've seen Zardoz. I don't need to go down that road again.
Zardoz is actually quite good. I enjoyed it.
It's so fucking weird. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not a movie for people who want to see a movie get done. It's not for people with shit to do in their lives. Because you're going to be watching that movie for at least a solid 3 weeks.
You won't get out of your
head. I'm pretty sure there is a reality where I am still watching Zardoz at this very moment. Yeah, this week, Lockout and Cabin in the Woods are both coming out, so we may or may not see either of those sometime in the near future and tell you about them. That's exceptionally informative, I'm sure.
And also, just so you know, just to ruin it all for you, Ryan and I are going to record an episode really quick next. So
we'll be prepared for 2 weeks, so we get to be lazy again, and then skip two or three more weeks after that.
That's what I'm thinking. All right, high five.
Yay. Oh, yeah, we've got it down to a science now.
That's right.
Be lazy for 1 day a month, record 2 episodes, and that's how we do it now. Because we have nobody listening, so...
That's right.
This is internet masturbation. Bringing it right back around.
We didn't know that, like, talking about porn would eat up, like, basically half the podcast.
You're welcome, Sean Demery. I told him that I could talk about this for at least 20 minutes, and he asked if I could.
There you go, Sean. So, that's for you, buddy.
Sean Demery, Demore, Demorne, whatever Demorne. You want to be called.
He is the hand that rocks the cradle.
The cradle of love.
The cradle of love. All right, folks. Thanks for tuning in. And we'll see you next time. Maybe we even put a new episode.
As in immediately after these words.